This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hey there, how you doing? Good. Look at all this. Hang on, I'm going to be a bit OCD here.
Yeah, please do it.
No, hang on a second. This is like a sort of like a game. I feel like I'm sort of.
Do you like this one?
I do. You know what? It's kind of weird. I kind of realise that. I do that all the time in restaurants and stuff with kind of placemats and stuff, put them together. I remember seeing that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David pretends to have OCD and starts doing that. I was thinking, that's what I do. Maybe I have OCD. There you go.
So, can you talk a little about shooting the end of this film? I mean, was that seemed bigger than Shaun of the Dead. I mean, was it like, oh my God, all of the shootouts and everything? Was that a challenge for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like, the film costs, like, twice as much as Shaun of the Dead, but the ambition in the script is probably five times that in terms of the amount of characters and the sort of, like, you know, the plot and the kind of the action. So it was really tough and it was a real challenge, and I kind of come out with it with even more respect for the kind of action directors that I love, just because, like, doing that kind of stuff is really tough. Doing it in the UK with, like, the kind of terrible weather was even worse, you know, so it was really... And what's funny is, especially in that end shootout in the town square, is that we never really had the roads closed off. We could sort of, like, we had, you know, because you didn't really have the money to kind of close down. It's like the centre of that town. So what's so funny is, if you imagine every shot where you see, if you then imagine behind the camera, like, you know, 50 school children and old ladies watching, it was really, really surreal. And, like, you know, and you have lots of French exchange students kind of coming through all the time. So it was crazy.
Well, the style was so intense throughout the whole movie, even in the paperwork scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard was it to maintain that?
Well, that was, I mean, no, I really, you know, like, all the stuff that I'd done before, like, has been kind of, you know, from Space to Shaun of the Dead, has always been visually very dense, and I like kind of, you know, things being really snappy and having lots of transitions and stuff. But given that this was in the sort of the cop action genre, and given the way that kind of that cinema has gone with, like, Tony Scott and Michael Bay in the last 10 years, it was a gift to go completely over the top. So I really, like, enjoyed kind of, like, sort of you know, and I love, like, you know, I'm probably the sole member of the Domino fan club.
Another one.
What about you? No, he's out. Okay, me and you against the world.
It's not me, it's someone I know.
Oh, someone you know. Jerry Bruckheimer. I don't even do that one.
I have a friend who loves Domino, but you explain your passion for it.
Oh, well, you know what? With the recent Tony Scott films, I just like the fact that, like, I don't know, a 60-year-old director is directing, like, you know, a 20-year-old. It's like those films, A Man on Fire, the direction of it is absolutely crazy. And I think sort of it's too easy to dismiss, you know, when critics kind of dismiss him as, like, an MTV sort of star director. I think that's kind of... I do think it does him a disservice. I mean, and it is like style over content sometimes, but the style is fucking amazing. I really like, and the thing is that, you know, I'm just a big kind of, like, film fan, and I don't really get kind of, like, snooty about different films, because I appreciate different films for what they are. And, like, sort of, you know, you can have something with kind of, like, sort of long-held steadicam shots, and you can have Domino. There's room for both, you know. So it was fun, like, doing this, because, like, say the paperwork thing that you mentioned, the idea with that was to take the most boring aspect of, like, cop work and make it so amped up, and so it was funny shooting those scenes, and that was exactly the intention, is that sort of... Because when we sort of conceived the idea, there's, like, a show, like, in the UK called Heartbeats, which is, like, a really, you know, really boring cop show about just a sort of cop in the country, and it's kind of, you know, sort of like Sunday afternoon kind of, like, TV. And so our kind of thing was, like, what if Tony Scott had to direct Heartbeat? Do you know what I mean? Like, sort of, like, and so that would be the thing, is that sort of to take this kind of, like, sort of the really sleepy, mundane end of the sort of the kind of cop work and amp it up. And we did research with real police officers whilst we were writing. We interviewed lots and lots of police officers, both over the phone and in person, and we went around kind of London to some of the rougher neighbourhoods, and then we went down to the country as well. And we had this questionnaire for all of them, and one of the questions was, which part of the job have you never seen dramatised on screen? And every single one of them said the paperwork. It's like 50% of the job. It's like being a teacher, is that actually teaching kids is only like sort of half of it, the rest of it is going So with that in mind, and seeing kind of like, I remember like vividly, like we went to one rural station and there was a tiny room smaller than this where like 8 police officers were all like kind of hunched over their things, kind of going like that. And it was just, and the fact they're all in their like stab vests and stuff, it was just really like sort of forlorn image of these officers all like having to do so much paperwork. So that was the idea with that, is like, let's make the paperwork the most exciting bit in the film. Really like, really amp it up.
And how much of that was a British sort of take on this genre? How much of it was sort of filtering these American movies like Bad Boys 2 and such through British sensibilities, or the
Oh no, it's absolutely the whole thing is that basically. I mean, in a way, like sort of Hot Fuzz is both on one hand very British, and on the other hand it's kind of trying to be very American, and that's kind of the joke. It like the film like, you know, kind of mutates kind of halfway through, and sort of like, and it's that point halfway through where they kind of watch Point Break and Bad Boys 2. After that, it kind of starts to go, you know, off the scale. You know, that was the idea, really, is that that's kind of like the turning point in the film. Our idea was is that, because sort of, they fall asleep during Bad Boys 2, which is quite amazing. I just like the idea that Bad Boys 2 is probably the loudest film ever, that Danny and Angel fall asleep during it. But I like the idea, like, it was like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, is like the sort of, like, the Nicholas Angel is asleep, but Bad Boys 2 is filtered into his brain. You know, like, if you fall asleep with the TV on and you start dreaming about what's on TV, is the idea that he's, like, sort of, like, he didn't see the last half of the film, but he heard it in his dreams. So he woke up, and now he knows Kung Fu.
So Angel is the name of your music composer. So was that just kind of an homage to him?
Or? Yeah. Let me grab
A.
And why him as opposed to anyone else that you know?
Well, because his name, Nick Angel, it sounds like a great cop. That was the thing. I think even before we had the idea for the film, like, sort of, we had a meeting with him. When he left the room, I said to Simon, Nick Angel, he's one good cop. You know, so that was it. So he is funny. We never refer to him as Nick in the film. He's never referred to as Nick. And, like, it's funny. Like, I think he was really pleased that we'd name-checked him. And then during the film, he started to freak out a little bit because he thought he was going to get the piss ripped out of him for the next kind of 20 years. But then, like, now, like, you see at the start of the film, like, you see kind of Nicholas Angel's commendations. There's those kind of certificates of, like, you know, outstanding kind of, like, work in on Operation Crackdown, and that Nick Angel's got one of those on his wall.
So how did you get... Oh, I was going to ask Scott Pilgrim, them... Mike White, what's going on with a whole bunch of...
Ask Mike, he's next door.
Oh, we're going to later today.
Well, the Mike White one is them.
Okay, yeah, I'm just saying, could you expand on your horizon now that this film is wrapped?
Yeah, well, there's several things in the work, and, you know, even before Hot Fuzz, I wrote, an adaptation of this comic, Scott Pilgrim, with Michael Bacall, who's in Grindhouse, who's a great kind of writer, but also an actor. And me and Mike White had been working on them, and also working on an adaptation of Ant-Man, so there's like 3 things in the works. On top of that, me and Simon have an idea for number 3 in our, what we're calling the 3 Flavors Cornetto trilogy. So it's like we know that the 3 films will feature blood and ice cream, and those are the only linking kind of like sort of linking kind of like variables. So it's just a matter of kind of like sort of what is next and stuff. It's weird, like, sort of, because it feels like we haven't even stopped working on Hot Fuzz, because like Hot Fuzz was finished like 2 weeks before it came out in the UK, and then, as soon as, whilst we were still doing the press, I shot my trailer for Grindhouse like a month ago, which is insane. And it's so weird, like, it's like with that, something like that, it's like handing in homework. It's like they give you the, you know, I had total carte blanche doing the trailer for Grindhouse, and like they read the script and they liked it and stuff, and then it's like, here's a little bit of money, go do it, and then like, here's when to hand it in, and then I hand it in and it goes, great, it's in the film, okay, cool, and done. It's so weird.
Short trailer, but don't trailer.
Yeah.
Will that be named? So you're thinking about making that into a feature?
I don't know. I mean, if anybody wanted me to, I'd happily do it. The thing about my trailer as well, unlike maybe the other ones, is that like the whole point of it is there is no plot. It was like, sort of like, I want it to be like, because sometimes you see some of those trailers for European films and you're thinking, I have no idea what the fuck that is about. It's like, and every, the idea was to have every shot to have like a different, my idea to make it look like a, it was a 90-minute film condensed just to have a different actor in every single shot. So it seems like there's like a new cast every, like, nobody like recurs. So that in the 90 seconds there's like 30 actors in it, which is crazy.
So do you have a plot if you expand it?
Don't. I like the fact this has turned into the Don't Go conference. I like it. Let's just, I'd rather talk about that than Hot Fuzz for the next. Well, it would have to be, you know, if it wasn't a feature, it would have to be like, I've always really admired, like, sort of Mario Bava and Dario Argento films. Suspiria is one of my favourite films, because Suspiria, I think, is one of the few films that feels like a dream that you've had when you've eaten too much cheese. It's like, so you just think, fuck, you know, it's like the weirdest bad dream you've ever had. And, like, I love those films that have, like, total, like, nightmare logic and don't really kind of have any plot or story. It's just kind of, like, sort of horrible kind of, like, bad dream after bad dream. So that'd be fun.
What are your thoughts on cake flushing?
This is a thing that's kind of come up, like, it was Nick Frost's birthday, like, a week ago, because we've been on this tour, and this is, I think, maybe our 11th city we've been to. And it was Nick Frost's birthday, and he got, in the space of, like, kind of, like, 24 hours, he got two big birthday cakes. And his kind of theory is he didn't want to add to his girth, so the only thing to do to give it kind of due kind of ceremony was to flush it down the toilet and film it. Nick is very impressed by America's toilet flushing. Very, very powerful flushes. You know, in the UK we don't always have those. So it was a great way to kind of see kind of like sort of like, you know, a birthday cake sort of go down in flames.
No.
So then now, you know, we have all of this on tape.
Okay.
We've done three so far.
DVD?
Yes. Well, the thing is that sort of, we've been doing this, like, the Focus wanted us to do, like, a tour documentary. And the truth of it is that we have, like, 15 minutes off each day. So, like, sort of, like, the documentary so far has been sort of us in a car on the way to, a hotel. Then, like, sort of, like, and then being in a hotel for the whole of the day. Then being in a car on the way to a screening. Then doing the Q&A and then in the car on the way to the hotel has been absolutely, like, you know, actually in San Francisco 2 days ago, I had, like, an hour off in the middle of the day. So me and Joe Cornish has been on, went around and tried to do as many cop locations as we could in an hour. And so then we did, and we saw, like, Steve McQueen's apartment in Bullitt, the deli that he goes into. We saw, like, the hills where they did the chase. We found the diner that Clint Eastwood says make my day in Sudden Impact, which is now McDonald's. We found Michael Douglas's apartment in Basic Instinct. And San Francisco is the perfect, like, place, because all of the locations are right around the corner from each other. It's great.
And that'll all be on the DVD.
Yes.
Cool. So, is there any temptation to do an American big-budget movie? What's your... Because if you stay in the... You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I suppose, like, you know... I suppose, like, I like to do a film over here, as long as I can make my stamp on it. I mean, the worst thing would be to kind of just lose your identity. As long as you can keep your identity, make films, then there's no reason to kind of to not do a film here. You know, it'd be a challenge. It'd be fun. You know, so
I was gonna say, with the success of Hot Fuzz and Sean, that there, you know, your budgets have gone up, but the money has been going up as well. Do you? If you stayed in the UK, I'm sure they'd give you obviously more money for the third and the blood and.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and we've got an idea for a third film that would be in the UK. So, you know, it's yeah. I'm very proud of the fact that the thing I'm proudest of with Hot Fuzz and Sean is that we made two films set in contemporary kind of Britain. That's kind of something that you don't really always see, because a lot of the films that you see have kind of like a slight fairy tale quality to it. You know, kind of Richard Curtis and Guy Ritchie films are both equally bullshit in terms of like their depiction of what kind of London is like. You know, I mean, not that the films are necessarily all bullshit, but there's certainly the kind of like sort of like the London that you see in Snatch doesn't really exist, as does the London in Notting Hill doesn't really exist either. You know, to make a film with Notting Hill and not have a single black person in it was quite something else.
How did you guys get Kate Blanchett to do that one little cameo?
Well, we knew that she was a fan. I'd met her in LA and I knew she was a fan of Shaun of the Dead. So that was kind of like a start. But basically, that was the first scene that we wrote in Hot Fuzz, was the kind of the girlfriend scene with the CSI sort of. And you know, the first joke was basically, you know, that you have like a really emotive scene with him kind of saying farewell to his girlfriend, and it being kind of very sentimental, but you know, you can't see her, can't see her face, and so, and also the idea, like you, like classically, like you're doing all of those things of taking your glasses off, but you still can't see her face. You can listen, so. But then we started to think about who could be that person. I thought, why don't we get a really like heavyweight actress? And in a weird way, there's something that's sort of a little bit subversive about it, because like, it's funny you're saying about like getting bigger budgets in the UK and stuff. You would still not believe the amount of pressure you're put under to put like really big stars in it. And it's funny, like sometimes that there was one review in the UK that kind of like criticised us for having too many famous people in it. And I was thinking, man, if you knew what they wanted us to put in there, like, so that, because like I swear to God, you do get people kind of saying, if you put this is not the name they suggested, but I'm going to say, if you put Ashton Kutcher in your film, you could get like an extra 5 million. Nobody ever suggested putting Ashton Kutcher in there, but like, but having like American comedy stars kind of do a cameo in the film, and thereby like, you know, that's more marquee value and stuff. And like, we actually wanted to keep it, you know, really British. So in a weird way, the sort of Cate Blanchett thing was like sort of a slight kind of like joke on that. I was thinking, let's get an Oscar winner in there, but let's not even see her face. And she was totally up for that joke. She loved it. And for the record, and this is why Cate Blanchett goes to heaven, she gave her fee to charity. So she is a one nice lady.
Did you you had a second person in there that might be...
Oh, yeah. Peter Jackson is in there as well. The irony with Peter Jackson is that we got him to play Santa Claus, and the irony is that we had to give him a fake beard and pad him up. So the two things that you would like, you know, 3 years ago that would have been the sort of the prerequisite for the role, like, he'd both lost. So it's funny. No, he was in the UK, and he, you know, had been a big supporter of Shaun of the Dead. And since it came out, you know, I've become, you know, friends with him and stuff, which has been great. And I actually went over, like, I had a little holiday and went over when they were shooting Kong, which was great. And I went down to New Zealand and sort of, like, hung around on set like a work experience kid. And so he said, I was telling him about Hot Fuzz, and he said, oh, you know, I'm over in the UK, I'll do a cameo if you want. I said, yeah. And then I thought, fuck, he should play Santa. Yeah. So then he came, it was brilliant, actually. It was really cool because, like, it was so sweet because he came down. He was in London for a week, and we were actually shooting outside. And he came all the way down, and like his cameo is like, you know, 5 seconds long, and it was really cool because the night before we'd done a scene. We were shooting kind of the scene in the castle, which was really tough. So we were shooting kind of night scenes in June. We had like 6 hours of night, and like you got a scene with like 15 actors, and there were all sorts of kind of technical problems. And it had the night before had been pretty disastrous. And then the next night, like, Peter sort of said, he goes, oh, I'm going to just, you know, I said, what do you want to do in the evening? Because we're going to be shooting. He goes, oh, I'll come and watch. And I was thinking, oh, fuck. Right, Peter Jackson's going to come and watch. And last night was, and it was funny because before we started shooting, I had like a cup of tea with him. And I told him exactly what happened the night before. And it was great because he goes, and it was because it was like a scene like this around a table. And like, what in the you know, movie terms, like what's called a dinner table scene is always a complete bitch because like the number of eye lines that you have to get and coverage if you've got people all around the table, it just is you know, it's tougher than shooting a shootout, you know. So I was telling him about this and he goes, oh, you know, the scene in Rivendell in Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, was like my least favourite scene to shoot just for the same reason and stuff. And he said, I could not wait to get out of that scene. So it was really sweet. So it was kind of like having him there and actually sort of like having kind of him like on my shoulder for the rest of the night actually like really was really cool. So it was like a sort of a good omen. It's nice.
Is Spaced ever going to come out here in the US?
I hope so. You know what, actually, I wrote an email this very morning because we have been asked this on the hour. I wrote an email to our producer and said, what the fuck is happening with the Region 1 DVD release space? Because, like, you know, what the official line is that there's, like, about... There's maybe about 10 tracks within the two seasons which we can't clear for North America. And we really don't want to go back and redub it with another track. And actually, in the case of the first series, the sound tapes which have the M&E track where they split off has been lost. So if we had to change any of the tracks, we would have to redub the scenes. Yeah. That ain't gonna happen. So basically, if we can clear the tracks, then it'll be released. And several US distributors want to release it, and we've had kind of over the years kind of many people say, you know, so hopefully it'll be sorted out. I really hope so.
Is that like The Hobbit to your Blood and Ice Cream trilogy?
The Hobbit? I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, like, I would heartily recommend and not just for space, for all of Asian cinema, I would highly recommend buying a region-free DVD player. They're only like $50, and then you can like go to Amoeba, go to the import section and buy anything you want. Mm-hmm.
They're great. I have one.
Yeah, yeah.
Grizzly, your setups, were there any ideas that you like said, oh no, that's too over the top, we gotta toss that idea?
No. No, it was fun doing the murder scenes. I mean, the idea with those was like to really, you know, on one hand kind of do like an amped up kind of like Agatha Christie, you know, because the sort of, you know, the Hercule Poirot films have a high body count, let's not forget. But also, I suppose the idea with the violence in the film was to kind of recapture the kind of the spirit of like the, you know, the hard R's that kind of like cop films in the 80s used to have. Like, even Beverly Hills Cop is more violent than you would remember, you know. And I think sort of because of an age where most of those films I saw on VHS, usually kind of like watching them when I was too young to see them around at a brother's friend's house. And so kind of like to sort of try and recapture the illicit thrill of watching Die Hard or Lethal Weapon or RoboCop or The Last Boy Scout. You know, films that kind of got increasingly kind of, you know, spectacularly violent in terms of people's demises and stuff. So it was definitely kind of like that was the vibe that we were going for, of like R meaning R and like sort of, you know, having I like the aspect of like the sort of like a, you know, having kind of what's otherwise a pleasant comedy having kind of you know, kind of brief outbursts of swearing and ultra violence, scattered showers.
I don't know if you've seen the reaping yet, but it has kind of a similar ending in terms of, you know, the townspeople and stuff like that.
I really no. You know what I love about the reaping? I love the fact that like the poster answers the question, what hath God wrought? The reaping.
Yeah.
Like, sort of like, what has God brought to plague us? The reaping. Isn't that brilliant? I haven't seen it yet.
I'm curious.
Last question.
I'm curious, with the success of Sean and with the critics and with PodFuzz, are you being offered more studio stuff? And are you amazed at what you're being offered? Are you turning down stuff?
Well, I got offered stuff after Sean, and like, you know, I had somebody kind of like, it's funny, I was at a party in London, and somebody chastised me for kind of developing like a Hollywood feature, saying, oh, you should stay in like the UK and stuff. And I said, listen, I turned down lots of things to do Hot Fuzz. I got offered, you know, some big kind of like US films, and I wanted to do Hot Fuzz. I wanted to make a British film, and, you know, and we want to make a third film. So yeah, no, and that's, you know, that's very flattering and stuff, but like sort of, I think sort of I you know, there's when you're offered things, there's a big difference between a film that you read a script to say, hey, that's funny, I would go and watch it. I'm saying, I want to spend 2 years of my life making this. So, you know, that's the things that come through in the latter kind of option are very, very rare. So there's plenty of things that you read them and thinking, hey, that's really funny. Like, I love a film like Anchorman. Like, Anchorman is probably one of my favourite comedies of the last 10 years, but if I'd been offered to direct that, I wouldn't have done it, because I kind of think, well, this film can exist without me. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no reason for me to make that film because somebody else can do it. When you get sent a script and you think, sort of, I can do this better than anybody else, so I've got, like, an angle on this, and this, like, really, like, sort of hits home, then that's the film you should do.
So I guess the question is the next film going to be the third in the trilogy, or...
Don't know.
Is it really up in the air?
Yeah, absolutely. It's literally, like, sort of, like, for the first time in ages, I have, like, sort of, like, a clean calendar, sort of, after the end of the month, which is, you know, which is great.